symbol of excellence in sports entertainment.
Hello and welcome to ARN. This is Paul Bromwell, and today I'm joined by the Hall of Famer, the founder of the Four Horsemen, the creator of the Spinebuster, the stopper of the best tag team of the television era, and a man who was the model, the Rome, Georgia fashion plate, if you will, long before Rick Martel with his signature beret, button, and arrogance. He's the enforcer. He's Double A, Arn Anderson. Arn, how are you today?
I'm digging that shirt, my man. Very nice.
For those that are audio only, I am wearing the Four Horsemen logo t-shirt, which you can find everywhere. But Arn, this is it, man. This is the logo. You own the Four Horsemen, and these t-shirts are now available to all our listeners.
Featured prominently, I hope, in the Horsemen store, right?
That's correct.
Box of Gimmicks?
Box of Gimmicks. I think adfreecares.com is another site you can check it out as well. And also, I know these are selling like hotcakes. You can find this for the merch for Ric Flair's last match. We'll get into that here in a minute. But again, multiple colors. I'm wearing the gray one, but you can pick your color of t-shirt that you want this logo on. But man, nothing like rocking that classic Four Horsemen logo, my friend.
It's like having an original Led Zeppelin t-shirt, man. Grown-ass men look at that and go, that's what I'm talking about.
That's right, buddy. When they see me, they just flick up the four fingers, man.
There you go.
So listen, I mentioned it, but before we get rolling this week, we're officially 2 weeks away from StarCast 5. We will be at what they've coined now, Arn. I don't know if you've heard this. They're calling it the Nashville Flair Grounds. It's July 29th through the 31st. And listen, they're partnering with Fight TV. You got New Japan Pro Wrestling's going to have a show. Black Label Pro Wrestling. You got GCW. You got the Four Horsemen. I mean, need I say more? David Crockett, Tony Schiavone, so many others. This StarCast promises to be the event of the summer and the biggest one to date. And our boss, who, by the way, is the third most powerful man in all of wrestling, he isn't done. I keep seeing matches being added to Ric Flair's last match. Arn, you're a part of so many historic moments in Jim Crockett Promotions. What a throwback these 3 days of StarCast promised to be.
Well, yeah, and if you weren't around for the Crockett days and you're not familiar with them, you've got a ton of current talent. Once again, Conrad has over-delivered, as he always does. It's going to be, I would say, second to WrestleMania. It's probably one of the biggest events that there'll be this year. You know, certainly in the top three, you put StarCast in there with WrestleMania week, and then you got, WrestleCade?
Yeah, you got WrestleCade's a big one. WrestleCon, I know that's built around WrestleMania weekend, as you mentioned.
Huge.
But, dude, this is big time. I don't think we've ever seen it before where not only are you getting the meet and greets, but these stage shows, which has always been kind of a staple of a Conrad StarCast. So you're getting Bryan Danielson. You're getting, Claudio is going to be there. Paige is going to be there. But now he's bringing in other companies to do their own wrestling shows, like New Japan and others, all packed in to this one massive event, man. This is crazy.
Well, it is awesome, and I can't wait. It's going to be a hell of a weekend.
I can't wait to see you, man, because I'm going to be there helping out, so we'll be able to see each other, so I'm looking forward to that. But I know what our fans, the listeners of this show, are looking forward to. Not only do they get to see you, but they get to see Barry and Tully and Lex, Rick, JJ, all of you together for a live stage show, plus that photo opportunity, the meet and greet, all in front of that Jim Crockett Promotion studio so that... I mean, come on, man. It don't get much better than getting your picture with all of you in front of that set, my friend.
Well, it will never be that group.
No.
Together. It's been the only time that we've ever all been together, this group of guys.
Yeah.
And, you know, with scheduling being what it is, it may be the last time you ever see that group. Probably will be. So, man, we look forward to everybody being there and just having a hell of a time.
Arn, before we get going, one final note. I've decided that our friend Amy Vaughn is now the first lady of the Arn Anderson fan club, and we will address her as such, by the way, going forward. She is such a Mets fan. She's going to be there, because, and she's such a fan of the Four Horsemen commemorative set that our friends at NWA Gold with you, Tully, Barry, Rick, and she has every intention, or so she says, of not feigning in line when you guys sign it for her in Nashville. So that's something else I'm looking forward to seeing take place. It's going to be a great time, buddy. Can't wait.
That's the perfect example, Amy, why I love doing this podcast, why I love doing signings. It's on a different personal level than just having a card and having a wrestling event. There's so many more opportunities to just say thank you to all our fans and, you know, just really have a personal moment with everybody. And that's what it's all about, really.
It is. It's all about that connection. So listen, now it's time to talk about what we're here and what our listeners want to listen to. And that's you talk about April 1989, an exciting, albeit very interesting month in the life of the Enforcer. One filled with travel, you got new opponents, tons of TV, and of course, your first and only WrestleMania match, Arn, as a talent. Are you ready to jump into April 1989?
Brother, you know I am.
All right, let's do it. Well, buddy, we start off the month hot. And I'm talking hot like just like we are now, the middle of July. But here we are. It's April. It's April 2nd. It's WrestleMania 5. This event takes place at Trump Plaza. It's an afternoon matinee, 18,946 fans, of which 17,500 paid. They packed the plaza for one of the most anticipated events of the year. After this long buildup, the mega powers exploded with Hogan taking the title from Savage in the main event of the evening. Savage wrestled with a staph infection in his elbow of all places and battled dehydration for the entire weekend. Even so, the match still went 18 minutes, and at the end of the main event, it was Hogan with the Winged Eagle and the pose down. And I got to talk to you about this, Arn. Randy had a number of amazing WrestleMania matches. You had Steamboat at WrestleMania 3. You had the tournament for the title at 4. You have this match at 5. The next year, he's working with the American Dream Dusty Rhodes. You have him at 7, the match with the Ultimate Warrior. And, of course, he takes the title from Nature Boy Ric Flair at 8. Before Shawn Michaels was Mr. WrestleMania, Randy freaking Savage was positioned for a show-stealing performance in every Mania he was booked. In your opinion, my friend, as an in-ring performer, because he is arguably the all-around best on the roster during your tenure there, what did you think of Macho Man in comparison to other talent you had seen with Jim Crockett and other territories?
Well, he's definitely a perfectionist. You know, I've never seen anybody as focused or driven, concentrating on business when he was at work. And Randy was one of those guys that understood early on the most important thing was to get the match over. Other than, you know, we always say, or I do anyway, somebody got to get over in every match. Well, Randy's goal was to get the match over, no matter who the opponent was. And, you know, everything from his costuming to his the way he carried himself backstage, the way he carried him when that camera was on, everything, he was always on. If he was anywhere around the business end of what we're doing, Randy was 100% business. And, you know, he was an excellent worker. He could cater to anybody, any style. He knew his business, and he knew the business, and he was a real pro. It's a involuntary gung-ho.
Ho!
Not a Hogan-ho, a gung-ho.
Not a gung-ho, and not a Hacksaw Jim Duggan-ho. No, it's a gung-ho. There you go.
Thank you.
Now, Arn, for your part, the Brainbusters wrestled Strikeforce. I know we kind of led off the show with what was happening there for WrestleMania, Hogan, et cetera. But you guys were in a match. It went about 10 minutes. And in a rare treat, we're going to watch the entire match together, me and you. Because, listen, this is the only WrestleMania match that you got to participate in. So we're going to do it. So I want you to just kind of walk us through it. You can chime in with your comments, insights as we watch this match together. Our first clip of the week is the longest, but buddy, this is what we owe you. This is our time together to watch your WrestleMania match with Strikeforce. Here we go.
This tag team contest is scheduled for one fall. Coming down the aisle with their manager, Bobby the Brain Heenan, at a total combined weight of 485 pounds, here are Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson, the Brainbuster.
Two really tough dudes.
No music. You notice that?
I do. Now here come the Strike Force with theirs. Listen.
You know, I'll say this.
I'm going to turn it down here a little bit. We'll get back to Gorilla and Jesse. But you said it, and I wanted to go back to it. Because you think about the pageantry, the spectacle of WrestleMania. But you guys stayed true to who you were. No music. Man, and that's a hell of a walkway that you had to walk down there, too. That thing was no joke coming into that setting there.
All business. All business. You know, the music was just one of those things. By not having it, and most people did at that time, that alone made us a little different, you know?
It did. I love the drastic difference in the two entrances. By the way, as we watch this, Arn, just for your knowledge and bringing it back to memory, this is Rick Martel's first match in 8 months. He's coming back from an injury here, and it would be right here at WrestleMania.
He's a great babyface boy.
You guys all four in the ring. Well, when you have comments, just let me know. We'll mute it, but we'll listen to some of the commentary here as they hit you guys with the double drop kicks.
Well, and if you look at the timing, that was damn near exact. You know,
yeah.
Tito was one of those guys that was an all around cowboy. He was just, put him in any scenario and he would excel. He was durable. He was dependable. Fantastic performer.
As we watch this together, maybe take us, if you can remember back to this day, what was it like for your first WrestleMania arriving in Atlantic City? Was it different behind the scenes at a WrestleMania than maybe what it was at other live events?
Oh, yeah. You could just tell the buildup on the days beforehand. There was a lot of media we had to do. And, you know, everywhere you went in Atlantic City was just covered with signs and posters and advertisements, you know, within every, I'd say within a 6 or 7 square block radius, everything on every pole was WrestleMania. You could just tell it was something special, something above board, and something that was not an everyday, just a packed house.
Do you remember any things like pre-parties, after-parties, anything that sticks out in your mind from this event here?
And it's going to sound a little lame, but not really. Barry Darso and his wife and my wife have been best friends going all the way back to the Crockett days. And they're still great friends today. And so Teresa and Aaron got to run around during the course of the day and really have fun. It was, you know, in those days we had to leave them home so much of the time, but we actually had some spare time. We went to the Pointer Sisters concert.
Nice.
Which was pretty cool, the four of us, and, you know, nobody bothered us. Everything was great. Had a couple of nice dinners, and it was just, you know, some time that we normally wouldn't get to spend. Double figure four right here.
Yeah,
look at the people. Look at the audience.
Yes, audience is big time into it. Both Strike Force members have you and Tully in figure fours. Bobby has a little bit of extra perm going on in his hair there, I noticed, for WrestleMania with his purple jacket on. Love Bobby the Brain Heenan.
Oh, he was great.
Referee Joey Morella. Fantastic referee. Gone from us way too soon.
Absolutely.
That's cool to hear, though, that you got to spend some time with your families. And this is 89 April. So was Brock born yet?
Oh, no. Just the oldest son, Barrett, was born.
Okay.
He would have been about, this was, what year was this?
April 89.
Okay, he was born in 85.
Okay, so
November of 85, three or
so
four.
So he was three. He's 3 years old. He'll be four in a few months.
Yep, grandma, we flew up to stay at the house and watch him.
There you go. Okay.
So mama could have a night, you know, a weekend out. It was really, because in those days it may not sound like much, but you never got to see your wife. You were gone all
I
the
bet
time.
All
24 days a month, we were gone on the road.
You mentioned you hung out with Barry Darso, you and your wife. You guys went to see the Pointer Sisters. So what does Telly do in that situation? Is he doing his own thing or
yeah.
do you remember?
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, you got to pick spots to where you're away from each other when you were on the road as much as we were. And together, we were together 24 days
a
month.
Oh, yes. So now listen, as I said, this is the first time that Martel has... you know, wrestled in 8 months. So it's not like you guys were running house show loops with these guys prior to this match. So do you remember any pre-match planning that you did with Strike Force going into this?
We were just students of what everybody did. We knew what everybody did. We had a game plan. We were mostly going to show that coming back off of that layoff that they were a good team. They were polished. They had done their homework just as well, which we did in the early stages of the match. That dropkick series was almost flawless, and it's just because they were flawless workers. They really were.
I bet at this point, though, you would never thought, hey, this is the one and only WrestleMania that I'll ever be a part of in my career.
No, everything was going great at this point in time. You know, we were used well. This was our first WrestleMania. We didn't expect to be in the main event. You know, we were about halfway up the card or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You know, so everything was going as planned.
The build was on. We're gonna get to it in a couple of weeks because, you know, we all know that eventually you guys would take the tag team titles away from Demolition in that 2 out of 3 falls match. So you're definitely being positioned well since you've been with the company and here with another big-time match at WrestleMania. So look, Arn, you're going to the top rope, my friend. Now, you've told me about this before.
50%.
This was not good for you.
50% of the time, something bad's going to happen, and this was one of those 50%ers.
You're still 0 and 1 million when it comes to going to the top rope, buddy.
Ouch.
You take the slam off the top rope here.
Oh, yeah.
You told me you didn't even like to leave your feet jumping into a pool before, so I knew that wasn't going to be good.
Yeah, well, hey, you get cocky, you want to go up and be a hot dog, that's what happens. Now, here's some of the story of the match.
That's right.
Tito's trying to tag. There was a collision earlier where Martel's kind of pissed at Tito, even though it wasn't his fault. So you can just see, you can start to feel a little bit of a rumble. Wrestling fans are very, very smart. They can sense when something is amiss. Okay, he just went the F-U, I'm gone, I'm out of here.
And this is a big angle here at WrestleMania. This is the split, the demise of Strike Force right in front of our eyes as part of WrestleMania.
He's leaving.
Rick Martel's out, leaving Tito all by himself. It's brilliantly done.
Look at Tully grinning. What an asshole.
There's Rene Goulet, I think, on the right
Sergeant
there.
Rene Goulet of the French Foreign Legion.
There he is.
Okay, still now, the heat is legal tags. We're tagging in and out legally.
Right.
Nobody there, Tito. Sorry, bud.
So this would be, Rick Martel was part of Can-Am Connection. He went on to do Strike Force, but then it would eventually be, once this happens, by 1989 and late, when he would then adopt that model gimmick, Rick the Model Martel. So that's where that's all headed with him.
What a handsome guy, man. Good Lord. He pisses me off just looking at him.
Yeah, I mean, another genius gimmick. There it is, the spine on the pine. Arn Anderson delivering that move at WrestleMania.
And I bet you if we had the volume out, not one announcer knew what it was.
Oh,
what
yeah.
a maneuver.
Well, I know Jesse just always came up with something to describe it. There's Tully. He's shuffling and dancing and prancing around the ring. Throws Tito in.
Mr. Santana. Wow. Chico firing out of that corner. The couple of short right hands. They underestimated Tito. Well, it's a gallant effort, but one against two. Wow. Look out. Monkey flip dog.
teamwork.
Tully Blanchard able to hold on, and Chico Santana.
I held him in the corner.
You
if
did.
You couldn't see it. Yeah, he went for the monkey flip. I had a hold of the back of his tights, and that's what allowed him to do the header. So I don't know if you could see that from the angle, but
and then here we go, buddy. You have him up. The spike pile driver, referee staring right at it. We've made a big deal about this in the past, that this was supposed to be illegal, but buddy, at WrestleMania 5, it's not illegal, and you guys pick up the win.
I guess you get away with certain things.
Let's listen in to the big celebration. And that's it. It's over. There you go. The big win. And Arn Anderson and Tully Blanchard get the victory at WrestleMania 5, man.
Was it the best match on the card? Was a decent story. It kick-started those guys, their own separate angle, and allowed Martel to move on as a heel, with which he did a good job. The model, like you said earlier, you know, was a pretty good gimmick for him. He looked the part. He pulled it off, and it was a great moment for Tully and I getting a win at WrestleMania 5.
Well, listen, you know what? They made him the model, but Arn, there's something to be said. I don't think Vince was clearly not paying attention to your fashion sense when you were wrestling in JCP. I mean, we've watched you. You wore those pink polos, popped the collar, the white sunglasses, that platinum tan. I mean, that could have been Arn Anderson as the model.
Yeah, I don't get it either. I was a damn good-looking man. Nobody seemed to get that side of it. They were too busy worrying about the icy cold assassin.
They were enamored with your promos, and they forgot about the sex appeal.
Not once did I hear anybody say, "Well, that man's got some high model cheekbones," which I did. Nothing. Zero.
Lesson learned. He could have been the model, but he just stayed the enforcer. But he could have done it all. We talked about it, the spike pile driver, and it was always executed behind the ref's back. This one was done front and freaking center and the ref, and that was good. But overall, this match was about as much the strike force splitting up as the wrestling. But again, this is your WrestleMania match. The next time we see you at a Mania in a Mania ring, Arn, 13 years later at the Sky Dome, when you hit The Undertaker with arguably the most famous spine buster of your career. How's that?
It's number one on the list.
It is.
It was. God, what a thrill. To be in the ring with Undertaker was just surreal. And such a pro, you know, in every sense of the word. Probably the greatest gimmick there's ever been in the business.
Absolutely.
I don't know anything that would top it. And what rounded the whole thing out is he was such a professional, had so much respect from all the guys, and earned every bit of it. He was a performer. He was a guy that knew how to put a story together. He knew how to protect his gimmick. He knew how to protect his opponent. There's so many good things I could say about that guy. We probably would run out of time on the show, but I bet by then they had a name for it.
Oh, yeah. Right? I think they figured out what the name was by then, buddy.
Yeah, so everybody benefited. To be on any WrestleMania is a privilege and an honor. Back in those days, it was not a gimme. Everybody on the territory was not on WrestleMania. You kind of had to earn a spot on WrestleMania, and the guys, maybe you hadn't got there yet, like us. We hadn't, you know, by the time we wrestled this match, we weren't peaked. We hadn't peaked. You know, we'd only been there a short time, and to be on that show was not lost on us. What a privilege it was.
There you go. And listen, buddy, we're 20-some minutes into this show, and this is just the first event we've covered in April, and we started with the peak at WrestleMania 5. So we're going to move on, because 2 days later, it's April 4th, and you guys completed a grueling day of television tapings at the Civic Center in Glen Falls, New York. In the last match of that day, it wouldn't air until May 6th. That's just how it was back then with TV. And you and Tully defeated Gene Ligon and Mark Brown, winning the match in just over 2 minutes with the spike pile driver, which was completed behind the referee's back. As we have learned, behind the referee's back is very, hashtag on brand for you guys. And then the following day, WWF recorded even more TV. This time, the venue is the War Memorial in Syracuse for primetime wrestling tapings. You and Tully worked against Brick Bronski and Terry Daniels. Oh, got to remember those big-time matches with Brick and Terry. You won the match by pinfall following the Spike Piledriver. Then, after the 2 days of television tapings, in typical WWF fashion following WrestleMania, the crew flew across the pond and worked the next several days all over Italy. The research provided to me by the guys at historyofwwe.com does not include you or Tully in any of the results. Do you know, Arn, if you and Tully were on this tour?
We're off.
Okay.
Which was really awesome because after we did the two TVs, we got to go home for a few days.
That's awesome.
And just kind of soak in the WrestleMania thing, you know. No, we were not on that tour. However, let me say that would have been one that I would have had no problem because in those days, the European tours were drawing and guys were making some...
Serious scratch.
Serious coin.
Yeah, there you go.
I'd have been just fine with going to Europe.
But... You at that point in your life, though, you know the money's strong, but also, like you just said, you guys never got any time off. So it's like, which
is more
valuable?
I was fine with that, too.
You know?
I mean, hey, I was fine with that. I had a good week coming from WrestleMania week. I knew that. I knew that was going to be a nice payoff.
Do you remember your pay for that WrestleMania match, if you don't mind sharing? I'm just curious.
You know what? What's crazy, I don't, but I know okay. I know it was good.
Okay, I'm sure it was, but I'm always curious.
And for that time, you know, and again, this was in the 80s.
Yeah, yeah. So there you go. Well, you guys would be back on April 8th. A previously recorded match would air on Wrestling Superstars. You and Tully won the enhancement match fairly quick, but fans were given a preview of who you guys would be working with all around the country on the house show loops coming up. And oh my, man, we've got the clip. This aired on Wrestling Superstars April 8th, 1989. Let's check it out together.
I'll tell you one thing. The Brainbusters are a great tag team combination if they're facing only one individual, like they did with Tito Santana. Against two, such as the Bushwhackers, they're going to have problems with Luke and Butch.
The Brainbusters, they think they're better than anybody else.
And they say they're machines, Kazan. Let's see what they're like when we put them through the Bushwhacker. The Rashing Machine. Whoa!
What do you think of that? Personally, I think Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson should not waste their great athletic ability on two characters like that.
Oh, really? I'll tell you what.
Hey, McMahon, you got to admit something.
What?
After the huge victory in WrestleMania for the Brainbusters, now they definitely got to be considered top contenders for the tag team championship.
Wait a minute, Jeffy. Huge victory? I mean, come on. It's not as if they were facing two men. They were scheduled to take on Strikeforce. It wound up with Santana one against two.
Hey, McMahon, it doesn't matter. It goes down in the books as the Brainbusters over Strikeforce. That's how it's going to read in Tully's office.
Yes, I'll grant you that. And I take nothing away from the abilities of the Brainbusters. Look at that. And it's reversing things. Look at that maneuver. That's reversed. And it's charging in.
Wait a minute. Arn Anderson hooking the ankle there. Double team effort. That's why they call it tag team wrestling, McMahon.
There was no tag there between the Busters. Referee's back is turned. Final maneuver. Scott Casey out of the ring.
Over.
Yeah, well, the career of Omar Atlas could also be over after that.
Here are your winners, the Brainbusters.
All right, buddy, here we go. It's time for your next feud, and it's with none other than the Bushwhackers. And we haven't spent a ton of time talking about the Bushwhackers, other than you admitted that being licked and all that was a little disturbing. But listen, I don't mean any disrespect to Luke and Butch, but listen, when you guys came to the WWF, I know you weren't hoping to get stuck or linked to all this gimmicky type stuff. Because when they were the sheep herders prior to the WWF days, they were blood and guts, man. They were some fierce guys. But here, they're characterized as more, you know, the lickable, goofy, style wrestlers. What were your thoughts on all this and kind of them being up next for you and Tully?
Well, it was, and you had to understand the times. You know, we had been given a pretty good shove to that point. Those guys, I would imagine, sold a lot of merchandise. Kids loved them. That style that they developed to match the licking of the head and all that silly shit. It was what Vince wanted.
Comedy. Sure. Yeah.
Straight direction from Vince, what to do. Win, lose, it didn't matter. Matter of fact, an interesting side note, during this little angle that we were working with those guys, one of them got hurt. I don't know how, working with us and licking our head, how they must have got hurt. But he had to miss, you know, a couple of loops. So we wrestled him with one, with the other. One would wrestle him one night, and I can't remember which one got hurt, but Luke or Butch. But they weren't there. They didn't come on the road. They were healing up. So it was one of him, Bushwhackers, against two of us, one on the floor, and they beat us every night.
Oh, wow.
When you would have thought, what a great opportunity with the Brainbusters, got the momentum that they have
exactly
so far.
Right.
This is a great chance to pile it on. You got one guy legitimately out with an injury. Manipulate the referees, cause some confusions.
Add the heat.
And screw them.
Yeah, add the heat to you guys.
Beat us every night.
So,
and if you'd have went in and asked the guy, they would have looked at you like, what are you talking about? They didn't understand momentum. They never understood that they brought us in and started us completely over, over. And we were over. We were on the day we walked in the door. We had just came off the damn run of all time, years as a horseman.
That's right.
And instead of starting over and doing shit like this, man, imagine if they'd have, you know, put their foot on the pedal. Hell, let us leave the guy laying, stretch him out.
That's right.
Do something to...
Made you even bigger assholes.
Yeah. But hey, you know, the fact is we went on, we had good matches with them. We tried to work to their style. We entertained the audience and... we did what we were asked, always, because I've always said, I didn't know you could say no.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And it's such a big transition, because think about it. We're coming off of months with you and the Rockers. I mean, that's Marty Jannetty, Shawn Michaels.
Exactly.
You know, and now all of a sudden you go, you transition over to Strikeforce, they're the bridge, and right into this with a very unique skill set, to say the least, very different dynamic, a comedy act. And no fault of their own. Like you said, that was the hand they were dealt and they ran with it. But to your point, just a completely different change in direction for you guys.
Well, and we love those guys. You know, it wasn't about that.
But yeah.
Being happy to put them over any day of the week, twice on Sunday, twice on Saturday. Wasn't about that. It's just business.
Yeah, it's just the change in philosophy on booking the two of you and Tully at this point is what stands out.
Who stood to benefit the most if we would have went another way?
Probably. That's
right. Momentum is everything in this business.
Well, we move on to the 15th of the month, and there's a promo with you and Tully and Bobby, and it aired on Superstars, and the three of you made your intentions very well known, and we have that promo, and we're going to check it out.
You know, from day one, when the Brainbusters stepped into the World Wrestling Federation, they have become undefeated. They've walked over everybody that's been thrown at them. Now all we ask is give us our world championship match, and we'll prove ourselves. You know, Bobby, when you come in, we came in at the bottom. There was only one way to go, and that was up. And all you told us to do was win matches, and that's all we've done. Every night we go into that ring, 1, 2, 3, our hands go up. Someday soon, it's going to happen. We view ourselves as businessmen. It was the greatest business transaction ever recorded. Being a part of the family, we've earned our way, we're going to continue to earn our way, and along the lines, Bobby, I promise you, we're going to earn a ton of money.
Like I said, just be yourselves.
And this is almost like, hey, whoever's booking or writing creative, whatever you're doing, this is a reminder of how we started, where we're going, and what we're here to do. I mean,
yeah.
You know.
And They had released a little bit of the chokehold they had on us as far as promos. We had a little more input. We didn't have the time that I would liked, but still the content was, you know, all you can really do is complete one thought a piece, make sure that Bobby talked because he had the heat, and we're off and running.
It's very similar to what you deliver to and from Crockett in that it's business, money, and championships. Those are our priorities, and it always been for you and Tully Blanchard. And listen, as I said, the promo doesn't exactly match the upcoming creative that you guys are put in with the Bushwhackers over nearly every night on this loop. But I do have one more promo. It's only 30 seconds, and this time the three of you do address the Bushwhackers. This one was on Wrestling Challenge on April 23rd of 1989.
You take these Bushwhackers. They lick each other's heads. They got the whole crowd doing stuff like this. They're completely unorthodox. I have two people here that are orthodox. Well, orthodox in one manner, but we can be the baddest, nastiest, backstabbingest men in professional wrestling. We are the consummate team.
The difference in the Bushwhackers and us, they got no order of priorities. We only got one priority. That's the WWF tag belts. If you want to be on the notch on the resume, that's fine with us.
So there it is, notch on the resume. So a few takeaways. Bobby's still one of the best ever. Tully never shied away from the mic. And you, sir, known for being able to take a thought and make it 3 minutes of intense believability, received a combined 60 seconds between both of these two promos that I just showed. Man, what would the harm be in giving the three of you more time to be able to create a unified, unrushed, believable message? They were just missing the boat with you guys.
Well, they probably wanted us to get over, just not too over, because you have a little more power, you have a little more say-so.
Good point. Well, Arn, 1 week later, you guys are back in action on April 22nd, returning to a town you spent a lot of time in, and the place that shows its love by booing the likes of Santa Claus, and that's Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Only about an hour and 15 from my doorstep. 14,089 fans watched the Brainbusters work on the Hogan card, this time against the Bushwhackers. In a match third from the top, you and Tully lost when you were pinned. Let's all digest that, Arn Anderson fans. Okay. The following day from Philadelphia, you traveled to the Maple Leaf Gardens in Toronto in a sellout, 19,000 fans. You can't argue with how hot the WWF was back then. It's unbelievable. They watched a card that featured Hogan and Savage wrestling for the world title. This match did not go on last, however. No, sir. It was the Bushwhackers taking on the Brainbusters in the final match of the evening. This time, the Bushwhackers defeated you and Tully when Tully mistakenly dove on top of you, Arn, and Butch took advantage of the air and pinned you for the win. I'm not liking this month so far, Arn, outside of the WrestleMania match, okay?
It blows.
It does blow. Oh.
Why do we have to relive this?
I don't know.
You have to understand the bad to appreciate the good.
There you go. I like it. Arn, when we spoke about Canada previously, you said the differences between a place like Montreal and Toronto were palpable. Can you share with us some of your memories of working in Toronto, either as a talent or agent?
Well, Toronto's like New York City without all that much traffic, but it's a Renaissance city. It's very diverse. Ethnicity is one of everybody. You know, it's a huge blend of folks up there, but it's a upscale place. You wouldn't know the difference. You know, there's so many people speak English, and you know, it's just a blend of everybody, and it's there are a lot of great places to eat. Some of the best, believe it or not, some of the best Chinese food you will ever eat is Toronto. But it's kind of different. It's like it's an American city. It's a high. Only way I can say it is an upscale American city.
Huh. Yeah, I've been a few times and I love it. Love every time I've been there. Great city, great food. And the times I've been there, it was for great wrestling action. And they are rabid fan. It's a rabid fan base. They love their pro wrestling. There's no doubt about it. And I'm looking forward to when AEW finally makes its way north of the border and gets up there. I'm sure it's just a matter of time. So,
and we will, for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, from one sellout to the next, the WWF crew flew from Toronto to New York City, the world's most famous arena, and you told us about it, quite possibly the dumpiest of arenas when it comes to trying to park and get around the city. But they had 16,000 fans come out that night on April 24th and watch you and Tully in a losing effort to the Bushwhackers. I'm really getting sick of this. Second from the top, the loss comes when Luke headbutts you in the midsection while you attempted a power slump to power slam Butch. And Arn, you won't believe it, but we have a clip from this match. And yes, sir, we have Angry Anthony and his lordship, Alfred Hayes, on the call. You know who Angry Anthony is, right?
I'm not sure. Who is
that? Oh, come on. Come on, Shivani. Here we go.
Oh, yes.
Listen.
That fits.
Yeah, here we go. Listen to him.
This boxing contest is scheduled for one fall. In the ring to my right, at a total combined weight of 485 pounds, here are Tully Blanchard and Arn Anderson.
Immediate reaction, Arn.
That was rotten, obviously, but did you see the fan reaction?
Yeah, I know. You're right.
Which is all that you take home with you.
Yeah.
Had they not reacted, then it would have been really been the shits.
I mean, the paying audience was happy.
Yeah, and that's our job. And, that you know, the garden is not always real easy to get to elicit a reaction out of. So, you know, it's just, Well, that's what it was.
Well, Arn, on this card, the main event of the, this particular card that night was Macho Man and Hulk Hogan, and Macho would win by countout when Sherry jumped on Hogan's back and kept him from getting in the ring. And I bring this up, Arn, because you worked closely with Sherry Martel during her days in WCW, specifically when she was with the Nature Boy. What a worker and a bump machine she was. But here she's with the Macho Man, and for me, they complemented each other so well, even though the package had always included Liz. What do you make of the Macho Man and Sherry pairing? For me, I just thought it was absolute gold, especially when they became the king and queen of WWF.
Well, I love Sherry Martel. Anybody that's a pro in this business respects and appreciates Sherry. She was a pro back in the day. I mean, she could work when the girls were just eye candy. She would splash you off the top, drop an elbow on you off the top, slap the shit out of you. And what a real lady she was, you know, when not performing in the ring. She was a great friend to have. All the guys respected her, appreciated her, and she was one of those unsung heroes that made that tandem of her and Savage so good. Yeah. Because she was more vicious than Randy was.
And she wasn't afraid to get in and mix it up with the boys, man.
You know? And get knocked on her ass for her trouble. You know, she was
gung-ho. She welcomed it. Yeah.
She was gung-ho, yeah. She was a real pro. And they were a hell of a package.
Listen, on April 24th, we continue WWF Recorded Wrestling Challenge, Primetime Wrestling, and an episode of Saturday Night's Main Event that would air on May 27th. These tapings took place in Des Moines at the Veterans Auditorium. Arn, you and Tully did not wrestle for the syndicated television, but you did wrestle one of the most over acts in the company. Yes, the one that your buddy's a part of, the champs, Demolition. You and Tully picked up the win by DQ when a frustrated Axe illegally entered the ring, and the four of you brawled until Joey Morella tried to break up the brawl, and Axe pushed him to the canvas. After the match, both teams would brawl to the locker room. This is the second time you guys were able to wrestle Demolition, but this time it was on TV, buddy. Arn, when wrestling the top team in a top act like this, you said previously you and Tully treated them like the Road Warriors. This is TV, and more importantly, this is NBC, my friend. It's Dick Ebersol, and as Bruce taught us, and the shirt says it, Dick was everywhere, available at boxofgimmicks.com. This isn't a Blue Chew commercial. Serious business, though. This is a McMahon and Ebersol production where everything needs to be perfect. Can you share with our listeners about the sort of production versus production of Crockett or even syndicated TV? What was this like in comparison to previous tapings, considering all the big-time players?
So we're talking Saturday Night Main Event?
That's correct. Yes, sir.
In a league of its own. For some reason, I would have never dreamed Dick Ebersol knew who I was. But, brother, he was, at this point in time, he was right in the mix of pro football, WWE. I mean, he was the man, right? NBC was the head knocker. And for him to come up, stick out his hand, hey, man, I'm so glad you guys are here. Loved you guys, da-da-da-da-da-da-da. You know, to me, that is not, I am not lost on the fact that that's Dick Ebersol.
Awesome.
And that guy knows who I am. He knows my history. He says he's proud to have us on his show. And, you know, the production on it was just, WWF had great production, clarity, how clear it was. The audio was so good, you know, every camera
crisp.
Angles, everything, crisp, you bet. And this was at another little level, a little bit higher, and its own NBC, it's not on cable.
Yeah.
You were on network television on Saturday night. We were chomping at the bit to get on that show.
Man, that's so
everybody
cool.
Everybody would have seen it.
Man,
the ratings were unheard of.
All the grandmoms and grandpas who didn't even have cable, they're watching Arn Anderson on NBC. You all had NBC. Everybody had the tinfoil rabbit ears, and that came in, you know? That's
yes,
big
sir.
Time, brother. That is big time.
Yes.
That's so cool, too, that Ebersol, he came over to you and just shook your hand. I mean, that is awesome.
Floored me.
Yeah, very cool. Arn, as we keep going here, as we start to wrap up the month, the next day from the sold-out Civic Auditorium in Omaha, Nebraska, 10,000 fans watched tapings of Superstars in primetime, and in a match that aired on May 15th edition of primetime, you and Tully defeated Coco Beware, the Birdman, and the Blue Blazer when you pinned the Blue Blazer after the Spike Piledriver from Omaha. All right, here you go. Let's jump on that airplane. You're flying to Portland, Maine, where you guys would wrestle the Bushwhackers at the Civic Center. This is 3,543 people on the 27th. You move on to the 28th, 8,000 more fans at Providence, Rhode Island at the Civic Center. The headliner that night was Jake the Snake Roberts versus the Million Dollar Man, Ted DiBiase. You guys would be second from the top, and you would lose your match to Luke and Butch. Just shaking my head.
Bullshit. And the hits,
yeah, bullshit. And the hits keep on coming. April 29th, you and Telly worked the Bushwhackers on the Hogan card at the Joe Louis Arena in Detroit that night. 15,000 fans watch the two of you lose the match to the Bushwhackers. And we close out the month of April on the 30th. 8,300 fans. They would come to the Richfield Coliseum, where once again, you and Telly were on the card. It would be Hulk Hogan's main card. And he's he against Macho Man. Unfortunately, as before, you guys come up short against the Bushwhackers. Arn, I'm sick of reading that statement. Okay.
Well, it's obvious. I mean, you can beat us. It just don't take long.
The Bushwhackers were over, man. Just like we saw that Madison Square Garden clip. The fan, all the fans were doing the strut.
Let me correct one thing, because this is part of our terminology that most people don't understand the difference. They were popular. They were not over.
Yeah, that's good.
Because if you're over, you move to that top slot, and whoever your opponent is, you have that same 15,000, 14,000. It's a little tricky. Just by getting a great reaction doesn't mean that if you're the standalone main event, you're going to draw greatest support. Kids loved them. Over, not so sure about that.
But
that's
for
not a knock on those guys. It's just
not
a difference in terminology.
They were popular.
Very popular. Kids loved them.
And kids loved them.
They were doing exactly what was asked by their boss, and the guy signs a check.
They're so popular, they made the WWE Hall of Fame on their popularity.
And they beat our ass every night.
And they beat your ass in April. They freaking beat you guys all the time. So listen, that's going to wrap up our coverage of April before you put your fist through the screen. And I say that you lost one more time. WrestleMania, you got the European tour. You're now working the loop with the Bushwhackers. Next week, we're going back to May 1989. We're going to watch at least part of the Saturday night's main event match with Demolition and the match with Coco and the Blazer that we talked about that was set up for May TV shows. It's going to be a great time, Arn. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Well, and you know, every night, just a side note, if you think it's tough being me, then I had to get in the rental car every night and drive to the next town or whatever we're doing with Tully going, this is bullshit.
I bet. Oh, I bet. Was he usually the one that was the first one to say it?
That is bullshit. Yeah, I mean, he would vent. I would drive. He would vent. I would drive. So.
Oh, that's good. I love it. Thank you for taking us behind the curtain. This is what we're here for, man. We want to hear those stories.
If you knew Tully and you know Tully, it's not a stretch.
Yeah, yeah. Well, good shit. Listen, Arn, this has been a lot of fun reliving it. We're going to jump into May next week, and we appreciate it, but we're getting there, man. I'm telling you, the months are coming quick where you guys are going to get your just due, and you're going to have those tags strapped. It's coming, man, and I can't wait to cover it.
Here's one little advice. Every now and then I like to give tidbits. April would have been tax time. Pay your quarterlies out there, youngins in the business. Do not hesitate to pay, overpay, because you do not want to get behind with the tax man.
There you go. And that, my friends, was free from Arn Anderson.
It's a freebie.
On behalf of the founder of the Four Horsemen, the WWE Hall of Famer, Arn Anderson. This is Paul Bromwell. We'll see you right back here next week on Arn Anderson.